warmest greetings to any person listening to this recording, wherever you may be, whatever your circumstances may be. I'm Rob Christie. I've been involved in growth and transformation for decades. And during that long and fruitful journey, I've had the privilege of working with many competent teachers. And this morning, I'm with one of the best. His name's Jim Hamilton. He's the author of 5 books. He's my dear friend. And most importantly, from your point of view, he has technologies to offer you which have been proven to benefit any person who will seriously commit to engage in them. Today, we want to talk about success, entrepreneurism, the people who rise to the top of the heap. I'm hopeful you're one of them, or if not one of them, aspiring to be such. Jim, from your point of view, what's special about the contributions that a person can make who's achieved a certain level of success in his or her life?
Good question, Rob, and great to see you this morning. We always do these things in the morning. Always appreciate what we achieve and allowing other people to listen in. You know, I was just last night and last couple of days become intrigued with Matthew McConaughey and what he's most recently doing, which is taking his stardom, because he's massively successful movie star, for lack of a better expression, and he's taken his star power and he's moving to influencing others in a useful manner. He has something called Art of Living, except it's Art of Living, L-I-V-I-N with an apostrophe. And he has a book called Green Lights. And what he talks about is, in fact, his language is so very similar to mine. I'm becoming really intrigued with his organization, which he had 2.5 million people Monday listening in on his program. And we have massive similarities. So I've come up in my own way. He's come up in his own way. He's become massively successful. And now he wants to help others. And he talks about the idea of green lights, which means when you go through life, the next thing you know, you've learned how to allow to the point that everything that occurs feeds your soul, feeds your, when I say your traffic, feeds your momentum, feeds your possibilities, feeds your growth. And in that, it, because you're coherent with green lights, that's the name of his book. I understand it's on the bestseller list for in the year, maybe 2020, that not only does he feed his own growth, but just like a, sorry to say a star, like a comet, you know, going through the universe, it leaves trails and it influences others, because when you're coherent and you're orderly, that's what you leave behind and that's who you touch. In fact, that's who you attract, is other orderly people as you become more coherent. To go off on a side thing for just a second, I've recently become really aware of the difference between groups of people that are coherent and groups of people that are dissonant. And I really, truly steer away from dissonance. It is so, my personal trajectory is really, really clear. And it's really kind of set in permanently now. And this quality of allowing, this quality of achieving, that's not the word I'm really after. This quality of flow has become really, really set in place. It's permanent now. And I live in a certain strata of activity and outcomes and choices and insights. And I can more strongly see stuff that is dissonant And I have no obligation at all to wade into that. And so part of success is, as we touched on just before we started, is, you know, birds of a feather flock together. And when you're in a dissonant mode in your life or dissonant period in your life, you have attracted others like that. And it's like when you are the crab trying to pull yourself out of the pot, the other crabs are trying to pull you back in. And so, you know, success is about escaping what doesn't work, making choices for what does work, learning how to stoke that fire. And of course, allowing is a big part of it, but also the ability to make choices, learn from your choices, continue to allow, continue to glow, continue to stretch.
My coach says everyone has a special talent, or to put it a different way, a greatest strength. What would you say Matthew McConaughey's greatest strength is that he brings to his commitment to helping others?
Besides willing to be crazy, you mean? Because,
well.
you know, if you're not breaking out of the norm, you ain't going to get anywhere. So I think probably a greatest strength of any entrepreneur, anybody that's successful, isn't about fitting in and doing what everybody else does. It's about breaking away. Now, I think it was Sunday, I read this article about Matthew McConaughey and his book, Green Lights. Not green light, but green lights. It's continuous green lights going through traffic. Green lights. We all know what that is. And I was astounded. And so one of the craziest books I read is Keith Richards, one of the Rolling Stones, talking about a wild autobiography or biography, whichever it was. And listening to whoever was talking about Matthew McConaughey, talking about that being one of the craziest books they've ever read. And so I think being crazy, I use the term slightly facetiously, but it's about breaking out of normal, because normal only gets you more normal. And if you want to be more and have more and become more and influence more, you've got to break away from the crowd. You've got to get out there in clear air. And I think from all of that, Matthew's then, because when you break away from the crowd, you have to have, now you have to have your own internal governance. You've got to be driven by your own stuff. And if all it is a lot of cocaine and a lot of who knows what, that's not very good governance. So breaking away from the crowd is a really powerful concept, but you got to have that internal governance, a certain kind of discipline, a certain kind of connection. And of course, my work says your connection with source is the foundation of becoming successful. And, so breaking away is only part of it. But Matthew McConaughey, he has, you know, one of the things it's not been on my list is being a dad. And I've not been a dad. But he's got a beautiful wife, and I believe he has three children. And to me, that's ballsy. I have a lot of courage, but I don't have that kind of courage. I'm more of a loner kind of a thing, and I do a lot of different odd things, but, anyway, you've got to be able to break out from the norm, and that's where it all starts. And then plugging into what's true, and now you've got clean air for becoming as big of an influence as you'd ever like to be.
Before I ask this next question, I want to invite you to let go of any tendency you may have to be modest. What's Jim Hamilton's greatest strength?
Well, I have to say exactly the same thing I said about Matthew, except that when I don't know if we, where I was most recent. Oh, I did a presentation in April, and I talked about when I was born and as young as I was, could remember my connection with source was always there. And as I grew into boyhood, I knew that connection. I didn't know what it was. This is all internal, being a little tiny infant, a little tiny people. on the planet with two arms and legs and being in a body. And this connection, this camaraderie where I'd come from was strongly and powerfully set when I came into this planet. And so the idea of buying into authority figures as I grew up, they just weren't a match for what I internally knew from this process of coming in with my connection intact, you might say. And so I had that internal governance from the get-go. After that, it wasn't so much about being crazy, but I did not buy any of the rules. I don't mean any of them. So I've been, and that's why the idea of being a dad and, you know, having a family and stuff never been part of my deal. I've been so, I won't say odd, but, you know, the goal of suntan feet when you're 20 or, well, how old was I? 26. Anyway, so I do think ballsy is a big deal, but ballsy with an underlying governance that really what you're learning how to do is refine your connection with source, refine that connection with that internal governance that is actually found all in all of nature. And so ultimately, I was very early on, I learned how to meditate. That's where I discovered the nervous system as a center, like a sensing, you know, sensing out and receiving back. And so I've had the ability to be really wild by not doing anything I was supposed to do. As it was, I barely got out of high school, had my 40-foot sailboat by the time I was 26, and I've just not played by any of the rules. And here I am at 70, whatever, and retirement is not even remotely on my list. I got my next 30 years of business planned. I expect to be around here to watch this whole transition. So this whole thing is, it's all wild and crazy, and I encourage that. And I'm not here to be a peacenik and walk around, you know, with my, like this. I'm here to be wild and crazy and teach about my connection with source and be influential. And I have a lifetime of building up to it.
How does your work support an already successful person in taking the next step up the ladder or achieving the kind of success that we associate with a guy like Matthew McConaughey or Tony Robbins?
Well, initially I was going to respond by saying that there's two kinds of success. The one kind of success that's kind of, I've already made all the money I can stand and I've got all the Corvettes and all the this and that's and the Lexuses and don't have the spiritual component. And for those people looking for what's next, I can be really useful. And then there's the people that have that kind of success where their spiritual life has become, where they've come to understand it, let's, for lack of a better expression, there's a power they need to plug into. I've never listened to Tony Robbins, even though I certainly know who he is. I've never been in any of his events. And I'm sure he teaches about some kind of a power. And I wish I could be specific, but I don't know. But even at that, people that are successful because they've enabled their natural state of connection with source, or they've come to understand a power beyond them. Because I think anybody with true success has learned how to partner with something bigger themselves. That's more my terminology. But my work, you know, here's where I kind of unabashedly will go wild. Say, I've got core resonance. I don't think there's anything like it on the planet. I don't think there is. I don't think anybody has got quite what I do, even though as the closer you get to the apex, the closer to the top of the pyramid, if you will, the truth gets more and more and more and more similar. Because ultimately, there's only one truth. There's a single governance that all of life abides by. Some people call it God. I call it source innate intelligence. And the more efficiently we can plug into that, the more whole we can become, the more successful we can become, and ultimately partnered with source, partnered with innate intelligence, blended with source, blended with innate intelligence. And we become a real human being when innate intelligence resides within us, or we reside within that order for which we are walking around with two legs and two arms, and in a world where truly being influential, which means being coherent, leaves coherence where we've last been. And I honestly believe that I am on cutting edge of that kind of success and that kind of delivery, and can teach it to anybody, but of course they have to be interested. They have to have some idea what I'm talking about. And if they do, my whole life has been unusual, and I used to call it extra innings. I don't really, this lifetime, I'm bringing some really interesting tools in. I got mind-based tools now, and the nervous system base, which is really sophisticated, and what it can achieve is huge. So you go into an entrepreneurial group or an organization of entrepreneurs, and you put a colony in that organization. Now we're grounding the frequency of God into the foundation of that organization, as well as the key individuals, and you've got something really, really powerful. And I believe I know how to turn the world around, grounding the frequency of God into the world through humanity of all things, because the rest of nature and the rest of the world's already got it. Humanity is what's out of sync. So grounding the frequency of God into humanity is the biggest game. And we can live a life happily ever after.
Just to be clear, for our audience, Jim, you aren't advocating a religious belief or making a request that people join a new religious organization. What you're talking about when you talk about sources, it's almost mechanical. Or metaphysical. Say a little more about that.
Well, you bring up a good point, and certainly my remarks are not religious. They might be spiritual, but in fact, it's a mechanical understanding of how things work. A human being is not intact on his own. The gallbladder is not intact on its own. The cells in the body, the cells in a tree, they are not intact on their own. There's a governance that they are plugged into. There's a like all cells have what are called microtubules. And microtubules are the little receiving dish that all cells use to get their governance from, because the microtubule is like a little receiving dish, and it talks to the cosmos. I assume it's a two-way deal. I would think it would have to be, because paramecium, they're constantly moving around, looking for food, backing up, going forward, whatever, sensing out, receiving back, sensing out, receiving back. And that's what goes on. And as we learn to plug in, somehow the humans are out of sync with their natural state of connection with source. I don't know if we got dropped on our heads. I don't know if we're a manufactured species. I don't know if the church ripped us off a long time ago. I don't know what happened. But the humans have lost their connection with guidance that all of the rest of living things on this planet have an intact connection with. And being out of that connection is really a mechanical understanding, especially when you recognize that the nervous system itself is like a living antenna system and your connection with source. The only thing I'll add to that is neurons is what the nervous system is made of, and neurons have far more microtubules than regular cells. So we learn how to listen and sense with the nervous system, and as we learn how to quiet down and learn how to sense our connection, you move out of the mind, by the way, to do that, but the whole thing opens up like crazy. Whoops, like crazy. Whoops, like crazy.
I am so glad you're listening to this conversation this morning. It probably means you have a sincere interest in personal growth and transformation, and/or affecting some important change in your life. I'm Rob Christie. I've been involved with the foregoing for decades. It's been a wonderful journey. I've gotten so much out of it. And I've had the privilege of working with a lot of great teachers. And I'm with one of them this morning. His name is Jim Hamilton. He's the author of 5 books, the inventor of several mind-boggling processes. Those processes have been proven to support any person who makes a concerted effort to embrace them. And they're about change, about aligning with what's really important. And those processes fall into 2 very important categories. One, which uses the vehicle of the mind, and the other, which uses, of all things, neurofeedback. Jim, let's share with our audience the mind approach. Particularly for those listening who have either already achieved some level of success in their lives or have a strong desire to do so. Take it away, sir.
All right, Rob. So thank you again for the opportunity to speak with you. And, you know, none of our stuff is rehearsed. We don't even know what we're going to talk about until we sit down. And so it's all fresh. So what I like is working with people that have made the discovery that empowering themselves or learning how to become empowered, learning how to find the mechanism that makes themselves work. And in other words, affirmations is a great starting point. And affirmations are a product of trial and error. They're a product of cause and effect. And as we learn how to refine affirmations, we start to have dominion over the mind, you might say, because dominion over the mind is where it all starts. Now, there comes a point where you've learned how to have dominion over the mind to the point that you can let the mind go entirely. And that's more the advanced, the core resonance that you mentioned, neurofeedback, working with the nervous system. But talking about the mind is interesting because the mind is first off, it's always with you. You've always got it handy. You don't need to go sit down in a chair and go plug into something or even need a pen or paper. The mind is handy all the time. And what we want to learn how to do is manage the mind because we are not our mind. Of course, we're not our brain. We're not our body. We're actually awareness. And so the mind is a tool that we ultimately as awareness have dominion over. And so having dominion over the mind is the beginning point of taking charge of your affairs, because otherwise the mind runs on its own. And when it runs on its own, you don't know what you're going to get, and you ain't necessarily going to get anything good, because without it having focus and without intention and without driving the mind in a particular direction, it doesn't really have an internal governance, I don't think. I'd have to think about that, but I think if we don't drive the mind, that's what we learn how to do, is drive the mind. We learn how to harness the mind. And when we do so, then law of attraction becomes available, cause and effect. In other words, we can see the results of what we achieve by managing the mind. All of that starts to become available. And if you look at Elon Musk, for example, his mind is very, very, very well developed. But the fact of the matter is he's plugged in so much bigger than the mind. And so you might say his connection with source or connection with the cosmos or whatever he might call it, then gets kind of filtered down, and he delivers his material through the mind into the world, because he doesn't do it by just heebie-jeebie magic. He actually has to talk to people and deliver his ideas. And I've never seen anybody that can achieve as much with groups of humans as he does. He puts things together so incredibly fast, like watching his giga plants go up and all that. So the mind is a really powerful tool used right. And as we start to, one of the things I like to say is that I believe humanity will save itself at the very last second. I mean, I think we're going to go right to the edge. I think we will. And what makes the possibility of success likely, and we're already at the toast end of the spectrum, I believe, but we make choices, we see the results of our choices much quicker, we make new choices quicker again, we see the results of our choices quicker, we make new choices again. And that is all mind-based. And so I believe we can learn. It's how we learn how to manage ourselves by first having dominion over the mind, and for soaring affirmations and prospering guidance light is all about that.
One of the things you've shared with me before, Jim, is that while affirmations are powerful, you don't use just any set of affirmations. It's a specific set that has been proven over time to move people in the direction of guidance. Say some more about that for our listeners.
Well, the way I'd rather say that is affirmations are whatever comes out of your mouth or whatever you broadcast. Like you can think about your mind as, it broadcasts. Just your thinking is a variation on broadcast. You might say a prayer is a broadcast. And so what we broadcast can be absolute resistance. It can be hate, it can be anger, it can be all those things that the problem with those kinds of that kind of thinking is you're blind to everything because in resistance and anger and whatever, you don't realize that you're producing more anger and more resistance and more resentment in your life because that's what your output is. And it's only when if people get that dark and deep, of course, courage is the break point for starting to be less dark, you might say, in your output. But what then happens is people go from resisting what they don't want or fighting what they don't want or just this massive overload, they move into the choice of what they want, which is really where affirmations actually start. But based on what they don't want. So they will be in a financial bind or the circumstances they were born into, or just so many other things. And based on those circumstances, they will decide, well, this is what I want. And the problem is your prayer or your affirmation or your broadcast includes what you're trying to escaping, what you're trying to escape. So you have kind of a double-edged sword because what you want is what you want, but you're including what you don't want. And that gives you, that's a garbled message out into the universe. That's a garbled message for law of attraction to act with. And so one of the things we talk about as kind of a part of plan B, if you will, is to move to how you want to feel. That's much cleaner. But ultimately, the third mechanism for affirmations would be what I call visionary mode, where they're not based on what you're trying to escape. They're just pure what you'd like to have in your life. And I think that takes some practice. But as a meditator, you learn how. So as you move out of the mind and the mind kind of disperses, or all of the difficulty that the mind churns around, as that kind of slows down, it becomes easier to be pure in what you'd like to have in your life. And I call that visionary mode. Now, and that can still be about 40-foot sailboats and things that you want. Because in fact, my 40-foot sailboat didn't have much to do with what I didn't want. I could probably go into some details on that if I was in psychotherapy, but I'll let that go for right now. But there's another gradient of affirmation Because affirmations are about what we want. And once we realize that what we really want, again, this is from a mechanical perspective of understanding, we've touched on it. What we really want is an intact connection with source. In fact, we were talking before we started, you're thinking about how a couple of things you might want to do. I say, enabling a natural state of connection with source before you try to make up your mind about what you want next in your life is a really good idea. So the point is soaring affirmations, guidance, and prosperity. Let's see, soaring affirmations, prosperity, and guidance light is that we just go for the whole banana, whatever. And that is our affirmations are about our connection with source, because anything less, you'll eventually discover that that's where you need to get, because enabling your natural state of connection with source is the foundation, the truest foundation of your life. It's the truest foundation of success. It's the truest foundation of having a great day. It's the truest foundation of a great girlfriend or boyfriend. It's the truest foundation of everything, because we're becoming enabled of a governance. See, I'm now more starting to talk about God or coherence or source or innate intelligence. I'm now starting to talk about it more as a type of governance, an order that everything shares, and we need to learn how to move back to that. So our affirmations and our goal setting needs to be first and foremost about our connection with source. And as we start to achieve that, then the whole thing really starts to open up, because ultimately we want to end up with access to guidance, with less mind, more guidance. And of course, soaring affirmations, prosperity, and guidance light, that's what we're delivering, is access to guidance. So that's what we want to move away from thinking, move into being plugged in. And that's what our affirmations, and that's what this program's about.
I want to underscore a couple of points you just made, Jim. My historical predilection about affirmations, I've got a manila file folder sitting over here that goes back decades, that has lists of affirmations that I've tried at various times, mostly, I confess, without much in the way of positive results. But what I want to underscore here for our listeners is you're talking about a much, much broader definition of an affirmation. When you say, you know, whatever you're broadcasting, whatever you're putting out in the moment is an affirmation. That's a much more empowering way to look at the subject, in my opinion. And the other thing I'd like you to say a few words about is, you've discovered a set of affirmations. You know, every track star needs a track to run on. You know, everybody who wants to make meaningful change needs ideally a proven path. And you have a set of affirmations that you share with clients that get them on that path. Share with us a little bit about that.
Well, you know, it's true that I say we all need some kind of coaching. You know, I've come up on my own. I've been on commission my whole life, so that was kind of like how I learned how to be successful, because I got paid. In fact, I started out selling encyclopedias door to door and all that. And that's where I started learning about trial and error and finding out what worked and this and that. But the point is, affirmations or our broadcast is the foundation. Again, it's something we have dominion over. And as we come to have dominion over our affairs, which starts with the mind, we then have dominion over our affairs. And our ability to be usefully influential is a product of the quality of our broadcast. And so I have to say, I lost our question a little bit. I don't like saying that, but I don't want to be lost in our conversation. I got off on a drift a little bit.
No problem. Your program that you offer to clients has a specific set of
Oh, that's right.
affirmations
That's right.
therein,
That's right.
which have proven to yourself personally and to clients to get people on that path to guidance. And
So,
share a little about that process, you know.
what we end up with are what are at what I call soaring affirmations, a term that I created. And a soaring affirmation is it's a product of a series of affirmations that I've chosen that are older. I didn't invent these. They're available, and I use those as the launching pad for what becomes soaring affirmations. So what we do, the soaring affirmations, prosperity and guidance light, we start with I think it's about 10 of these affirmations that already exist, and they're a certain type of quality, and so I've chosen those and actually have a lot of experience with them. And then you meditate, you write these, there's two parts to it, but you end up meditating about the lesson for the day. And when you come out of the meditation, you then rewrite the affirmation based on what the meditation kind of introduced to you. And that becomes the soaring affirmation. And it's astounding what's inside of us that comes out. So the affirmation, again, based on our developing our connection with source, something that already exists is kind of the foundation. And we accentuate that through meditation. And it's a little 15, 20-minute thing we do on, it's part of the program for which something very new comes out. And the soaring affirmation is the really powerful concept. And when you go back and look at those later, it's astounding what's inside of us. Curiously, it's astounding what's inside of us if we could just but ignite that truest part of ourselves. So these affirmations that I use to create the soaring affirmations is a really, it's actually a very successful concept, and I've been using it since I'd say about 2004. I've done this program myself 4 or 5 times. And all of core resonance came out of that. All of the stuff I do comes out of that. But one of the things it takes is the discipline of doing it. There's no doubt about it. Managing the mind is where we have to start. And without that, we have nothing. And so affirmations is how we can see cause and effect as we learn how to have the discipline of managing the mind and causing the quality of our broadcast and our intention to become really clear so that we can see the quality of the results we're achieving. We can continue to refine our affirmations and that whole thing.
I think it's fair to say, Jim, that this is far removed from what I might label as a traditional approach to problem solving. You're accessing wisdom here. You're accessing information in a whole new way.
You know, that's actually quite true. I wouldn't have thought of that, but humans partnered with innate intelligence, partnered with, and we all have it anyway. Like, say, a gallbladder wouldn't even stay a gallbladder in the body if it wasn't this internal governance or this governance that causes a gallbladder and all the cells in the gallbladder to keep talking among themselves as a gallbladder. They don't just disperse. And so there's a governance. And as we learn how to understand that governance, the amount of wisdom and access to truth or what's true becomes foundationally so big. I believe the species, the human species, is without this. And I don't, again, I'm not sure how it happened. I don't know how the humans got out of sync with their natural state of connection with source. Because when you move out of the mind, that connection becomes enabled naturally, and the way you see it first is as guidance. and as guidance takes over what the mind used to do, then the quality of your reality creating becomes significantly greater, which, by the way, means as the quality of your reality creating gets better, it then becomes easier to allow what's next in your life, because allowing is how you move up and out and move into this access to wisdom. You don't do it by climbing a ladder or tricking people into, or paying $50 under the table to somebody, or $5 billion under the table to somebody. It's about learning how to let go to this bigger truth. And I think all of us at some level are aware that a lot of people are very afraid of the idea of letting go. But this is what we're offering, is a mechanism of transitioning from being afraid of letting go to learning how to letting go, how to let go, for which wisdom, you know, that's not really a term I really use, but that's exactly what it is, because there's an order that everything shares. And you want to call that wisdom? You certainly can. And we can learn how to embody that and let it become part of us, for which the game is to allow innate intelligence to express through us with no distortion. So we don't really learn how to move out of the way. And then we become influential, like Matthew McConaughey is becoming. 2.5 million people on a Facebook thing, on a presentation he did Monday night, 2.5 million or 225,000 people. That's a good sized crowd. That's a lot of influence, and it's good influence. So this is what we want to learn how to do. We all need to learn. That's how we turn the planet around. That's how we save the whales and the polar bears and the bumblebees and all that. Plug into what's true.
Share a little with the audience about the difference between resistance and allowing.
Well, if you wake up in the morning with a hangover, that's going to be a day that's going to look like resistance, because your ability to process information is practically zero, and the brain's on overload from the byproducts of digesting the alcohol, the toxins, and all that kind of stuff. So the brain is in overload processing that. It has no ability to process other materials. So that's how we come to be shut down when we have a hangover. I didn't know that's exactly where I was going. It's a good analogy, though, because when we're in overload, our ability to allow is really minimal, because it takes a bit of horsepower to allow. You don't just mamby-pamby allow. When the brain's in overload, the brain needs to be protected from incoming information, and that's what the mind does. And so that's where resistance comes from. Resistance and overload, the brain on overload, have a massive amount in common. And the problem with resistance and overload is that's what the broadcast is. And the broadcast delivers what you broadcast. Now, ultimately, you break out of that by learning how to allow what you once resisted. And courage is that median point on that changing. But the fun part about allowing is you learn to allow, your reality creating starts to improve, so that the next bout of allowing is easier, because you're creating realities in a much more useful manner, and the ability to allow becomes greater and continue. And next thing you know, you've allowed yourself all the way to heaven, so to speak. And that's actually how it works.
Greetings to anyone listening to this recording. I'm Rob Christie. I've been involved in personal growth and transformation for decades. During that journey, I've had the privilege of working with a number of great teachers, and I'm with one of them this morning. His name is Jim Hamilton. He's the author of 5 books, the creator of several powerful processes that will support anyone who wishes to make a meaningful change in his or her life. We want to talk to a specific audience today. Do you consider yourself successful? Using whatever definition success may have for you. We'd like to provide you this morning with at least one nugget, maybe more than one, that will allow you to take the next step up the ladder. In our experience, successful people reach a point where they've achieved, perhaps material success, business success, relationship success, some combination of those, or even other elements. And we find they get to the point where they say, how can I contribute more to the people in my life, my employees, my family, the rest of humanity? Jim has a couple of processes, and I'd like him to focus on one of them for a moment, and that is a mind-boggling statement he made the day we met, and that is, I've discovered a way to accelerate the benefits of meditation. Having meditated for decades, that got my attention immediately. I insisted Jim sell me one of his books on the spot. Jim, tell us how, through the use of neurofeedback, you figured out a way to accelerate the benefits of meditation.
All right, Rob, good to be here. Good to have conversation and people listening in, and maybe they'll add comments and throw us some questions of their own. So myself, I have almost 50 years background in meditation now. I started in November of 1973. I went easily 10 years before I ever took my first break, which actually was America's Cup summer in Newport, Rhode Island, when the Australians beat the Americans for the first time in 132 years or something like that. And I learned early on as a meditator that once I started moving out of the mind, because that's what the game of meditation is not to push the mind away, but to just to quiet down and actually allow the mind all of its noise and all of its racket until the mind finally quiets down on its own, which might take a couple of years to really become proficient at, but it's all part of. A few years into meditation, I came to realize that meditation is like learning how to listen with the nervous system. I'm out of my mind. I'm quiet. I'm in this state of peace. I'm in this state of, I wouldn't even call it contemplation. It's the idea is to move out of the mind. And what I came to realize is that meditation is like listening with the nervous system. And I realized that the nervous system came to understand it as our center. And one of the things I talk about is the nervous system is made out of neurons, and neurons have far more microtubules than other kinds of cells. And the microtubules are the listening points of the body, listening to the governance of the order that everything shares. And so meditation is about quieting the nervous system, quieting the mind, so that the nervous system, so that you become aware of the nervous system doing its sensing. If nothing else, when you look out through your eyes, you're sensing out with your eyes, with vision, and you're receiving back data. When you listen, you're listening with the ears and you're receiving back data. That goes into the brain, which is just a nodule of the nervous system. So meditation becomes first an understanding that our nervous system is our center. And so I've worked with several interesting people, actually three physicists. The middle one introduced me to neurofeedback. This would have been 2006, 2007. I sold $1 million worth of neurofeedback for that guy in a period of 14 months based on two ideas in my first book. But what happened was I came to see that we could quiet the nervous system, quiet the mind, if you will. Well, obviously different things, but we could quiet the human mechanism with neurofeedback much quicker than we could with meditation. And I'm not making one better than the other. Maybe we'll touch on that a little bit, but what came of this whole thing was I ended up breaking away from this guy because he was a little on the crazy side. He was really interested in data. He was more than however much he was charging and taking care of customers, he was really more interested in collecting data. So I broke away from him, and I did one of the soccer teams in Mexico and whatever. But I developed my own understanding of neurofeedback, and I really broke away from the rules of neurofeedback altogether. And I learned how to let the brain discover itself through the hardware software, through the neurofeedback gear, rather than somebody with a lab coat and a clipboard doing a brain map and deciding the parts of the brain that were out of balance, which is really a typical deal, and using protocols or exercises to kind of push the brain back into order so that it's balanced between the different hemispheres, between the different parts of the brain. I learned how to let the brain find itself through the hardware software, let the brain clean itself up itself, kind of like a variation on defragging a hard drive, except the brain is intelligent. And when you give it the opportunity to discover itself, it will revise all of its old traumas, held traumas, and start to clear that up. And as it does, the brain quiets down. And as the brain quiets down, that noise from all that overload, the brain being an overload, diminishes. And as that diminishes, our natural state of connection with source naturally becomes enabled. So you might say that resistance and consciousness are inverse because when we're in overload, so when the brain's in overload, that's what causes the mind to shut down incoming information. That's where resistance and rigidity come from. The mind is like a guard dog for a brain on overload. It's the actual overload of the brain that's the actual problem. So because I can go in there with core resonance, my variation on neurofeedback, and it is technically neurofeedback, it's just nobody uses it the way I do. Very few people, very few, 5% of the world out there. And algorithms is not part of it at all. But what we've learned how to do is we learned how to quiet the nervous system through core resonance, proprietary neurofeedback used entirely differently. As the brain quiets down, the nervous system quiets down. As the nervous system quiets down, that natural state of connection with source naturally becomes enabled. And what happens then is the mind recognizes that connection and will sub, sorry, I say submit, that's not the word I use, will relent to that connection. So the big problem with all of this consciousness work is how to put the mind aside ultimately. Initially, you want to use it to its greatest capacity, but ultimately, you want to let go of it. And so, by building our connection with source, by quieting the nervous system, the mind will relent to that connection. And that's how you really start moving into consciousness, because in quieting the nervous system, enabling that natural state of connection with source, the first thing it shows up is guidance. And guidance then drives your life, for which the concept of cause and effect and law of attraction, all that stuff become very, very, very powerfully evident. And there's a much bigger game. And when we move out of the mind and move into this access to guidance, the whole thing opens up like, well, at the very least, we become exponential, massively exponential in our contribution for whatever it is we're doing. Because partnered with source, big, big, big deal. It's available. It's becoming available now on the planet.
As people go through your process and quiet their minds, what kinds of new life experiences have you observed clients having as a result of so doing?
Well, the first thing that happens, there's a number of things that come to mind, but the first thing that happens is resistance drops. Again, as we clean up, as we give the brain exercises, let the, and by the way, there's no programming in core resonance. We let the brain discover itself through the hardware software. The brain reorganizes itself. As the brain reorganizes itself, the overload diminishes, allowing becomes greater, and therefore resistance drops. I think of a particular woman who has seen me a long time ago. And she, in fact, I ended up dropping her. She would not give up the hate she had for her ex-husband. She wasn't willing to do it. I mean, it was right there in front of her to do, and she just wouldn't. I finally said, adios. Why would I sit there and spin my wheels with somebody that was knew that she could, but preferred to hate? But my point is, she's attractive, and she had, you know, she's got a kid by herself, and he'd left and whatever. And of all things, she's a hypnotherapist. Scary, just scary. But I remember she was in my office, and her second. So one of the things she wanted to do, she was ready to start dating. This is what this was all about, I guess. And I don't know if it was her first. I think it was her second date. The guy canceled on her with a text message, and that text message came in while she was in the office with me. And she remarked later that normally she would have gone bonkers in overload on that. She would have been all over his case. And that's it. That's a simple, extreme example of how resistance fades with core resonance. And so as we start giving the brain exercises, as we allow the brain to discover itself through the hardware software, as the brain starts to reorganize itself, it starts to have more processing power, more allowing becomes available. And so I created the term synchronicity, harmony, and order a very long time ago. And that's what we would document. By the way, so when you do core resonance, and you start, what we do is we give the mind a job of looking for newfound. In other words, we give the mind, we're working with the brain, but we give the mind a job of looking for and documenting newfound synchronicity, harmony, and order, which, by the way, happens to be an affirmation. In fact, you can always, by looking for what's good in your life in every moment, that becomes an affirmation. That's what I call a witness. We've, in some of our series, we've talked about the power of witness, which is identifying an affirmation that you now see in your reality creating. So it takes the affirmation to another level. But synchronicity, harmony, and order is one of the big things that comes from quieting the nervous system, enabling our natural state of connection with source. And the evidence of that is, again, I call it synchronicity, harmony, and order. And so again, as that shows up, allowing becomes easier. It's hard to allow when you just, I don't know what a good example is. You know, you told your boss to go so-and-so or so-and-so, and then the next day you got to go to work to get fired. It's hard to allow when we create all these disruptions in our life. So as we move to synchronicity, harmony, and order, allowing becomes easier. And that's the path. That's the beginning of the path.
Let's suppose you're an entrepreneur. And you're working with Jim Hamilton on the tool we've been discussing. How might that show up in a positive way with respect to your relationships with your employees and how you treat them?
Well, Rob, it's a great question, because the ultimate way to use core resonance is as a colony. And a colony is six people sharing the ownership of the gear. I don't really do sessions with individuals. That's very time consuming. I don't have time for that. I have done that, and it's very rewarding, but it's really time consuming, and it's really not my focus. My focus is colonies, which is six people buying and sharing the use of the gear, which they all have to be local to it. So a perfect example is when an organization, a green organization or an NGO or your alternative companies where it's entrepreneurial based, you put core resonance in that organization and you take your top six people. And it might be your secretary might be one of those, because the coherence in the order is. So what we do is we give people exercises so that their brain quiets down, they become internally coherent. And as the nervous system quiets down, they become coherent, then they become resonant with each other. That's huge, just all by itself. So think about having an organization and your top salespeople and the owner and the CEO and maybe the CFO and maybe the, like the personal assistant to the owner of the company are all becoming coherent. And by the way, you do the sessions individually, and you can depends on how often you do them. I usually spend about an hour and a half on this a day, but it is so much bigger than what you can accomplish with meditation, because in quieting the nervous system, not only do you enable your natural state of connection with source, it becomes you, and you become resonant with it, and that then becomes an internal governance within the organization. So I actually call that taproot by core resonance. That's a colony is six people sharing the ownership of the core resonance neural feedback for grounding the frequency of the God into the world for the purposes of world peace, and like the Maharishi effect, model the Maharishi effect. The same technology called taproot by core resonance is meant to be used at the foundation of entrepreneurial organizations and peace groups and different kinds of groups where they want the center of their organization to be coherent. Because when they become coherent, they now have a different kind of a governance instead of one of the important people coming in with a hangover once a week or fighting with her girlfriend or whatever it is. They come in coherent, and you need that center of your organization to be coherent. We now have a way to do that. It's huge. It's just huge.
It seems if the owner of a company made a personal commitment and enrolled five of his top people, creating a group of six, that there would be a profound trickle effect in that organization from that commitment.
Well, it's not a trickle effect. It's a lot more than that. It's a lot more. I'll get the analogy I would like to use is, okay, we've talked about the map of consciousness in these different series, and the map of consciousness is interesting because it's a scale of 0 to 1,000, 0 to under 200 states of apathy, fear, grief, anxiety, rage, whatever, up through pride at 175. I'll put the map up. 200 is labeled courage. And from courage, you start moving into gradients of allowing, because there isn't much allowing at pride or anger or resentment or grief. But as you move into courage, allowing starts to grow, and you move up the map into neutrality. I think I have my thing right here. Neutrality, willingness, acceptance, reason, love, joy, peace, enlightenment. But the point is, as we quiet the nervous system with core resonance, as we quiet the overload, the allowing grows much faster than a lifetime. Dr. David Hawkins says people bump 2 points in a lifetime. Core resonance can bump people toward 200 points in a couple of years because we can dramatically drop the internal resistance, and resistance and consciousness are inverse. So because we can allow the brain to discover itself through the hardware software, and the brain reorganize itself and quiet down, resistance drops very, very, very quickly. And so consciousness goes up. So we can bump people from, say, 350 to 550 or 450 to 600 or 650. And the point becomes one person at 600 on the map counterbalances the negativity of 10 million people. So when you have core resonance at the foundation of your organization, it's not a trickle effect with the rest of your organization at all. And it's not like you're the Wizard of Oz and you're a group of six that walks around strutting around because you're hot stuff. You move out of the mind, you move into guidance. The organization then becomes kind of guidance driven. It's kind of hard to understand, but synchronicity, harmony, and order is what it all looks like. And you have a massive influence on others. So as you become coherent within, which is a product of quieting the, and why is the brain on overload in the first place? Because we're out of our natural state of connection with source. We don't have access to guidance. Therefore, the brain's manually doing everything. It was never designed for that. That's where the overload comes from in the first place. So as we quiet the brain, quell the overload by the brain reorganizing itself through the use of the hardware software, because it can see itself like a technology mirror. As the brain quiets down, our natural state of connection with source becomes enabled, guidance shows up, and the more that the overload diminishes, the more you move up the map. I say that we can bump people towards 700 on the map. One person at 700 counterbalances a negativity of 70 million people. What would a group of six, like a portal of six people with their minds way, 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 way diminished, their connection with source way, way, way enabled. That's a portal for grounding the frequency of God into the world as coherence. Coherence dissipates distortion. If you really wanted to understand this better, you'd understand, learn about the Maharishi effect, because they demonstrated that for 30 years. We're doing the Maharishi effect on steroids with core resonance. And parking core resonance as taproot, what I call it, taproot for whatever I was calling it a few minutes ago. It's funny. Taproot for core resonance? Taproot. Anyway, as we ground the concept of core resonance colonies inside an organization, we can have a massive influence on that organization by causing it to become coherent. We then, by the way, choose better quality customers. We make better choices as an organization, and the whole thing really starts to change. And business is a really powerful place to try to make a difference in the world, or a very powerful place as a basis or a base for changing the world, making it easier for the whales and the bumblebees and the rest of them.
As a fellow meditator, I think of meditation as a lifelong commitment. And over the decades, the changes that I was able to, at least that I thought I was able to attribute to my meditation practice, as a rule, tended to take a long, long time. And what you've shared with me and in our audience is that the technology you're sharing with us today in a business organization is the example we've been using, doesn't necessarily take a long time. Am I reading you correctly on that one?
Yeah, that's actually the whole point. Because we can rapidly quiet, see what meditation about is about quieting the nervous system, but to do that you have to first move out of the mind, because the mind's in the way. And the mind is not that fancy of a tool once you understand access to guidance. In fact, the mind is really a crappy two-dimensional polar linear tool that is limited to what it already knows as it projects out. It's not a very good tool at all. And so once you learn how to access guidance, the whole thing opens up. But the way we do that is by rapidly quelling the overload by letting the brain, which the brain is intelligent, might be a serial processor, but it's intelligent. And as it sees the opportunity to organize itself so that it can become more efficient, it will do that. And so, and curiously, the guy that introduced meditation to the Western world, Maharishi, is the guy that introduced the Maharishi effect. And the Maharishi effect and core resonance have a massive amount in common, because in quieting the nervous system and enabling our natural state of connection with source, we can see results. The Maharishi effect, 1993, they did this for 30 years, demonstrations for 30 years. 4,000 meditators, experienced meditators, came into Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. was one of the crime capitals of the planet, certainly the U.S. Rape, mayhem, murder, on and on and on, and over a seven-week period. And they invited criminologists and sociologists and all kinds of academics to observe, and they told them how they were going to score and what they were going to do, what they expected to see. And over a seven-week period, crime dropped 23.3%. And then 30 years later, very accidentally, I was preparing a slide presentation and I discovered that Washington, D.C. now, this is only a couple of years ago, maybe it was 19, no, it had to have been only a couple of years ago. Washington, D.C. is one of the seven safest cities on the planet. Now, so the Maharishi effect was demonstrated in D.C. in 1993, and 30 years later, it's one of the seven safest cities on the planet. So meditation is really powerful, but core resonance does the same thing so much faster. And because I have a massive background in meditation myself, I understand what a lifetime of meditation is. And nowadays, we can go way past that. And the business environment is the ideal place. Taproot by core resonance, that's what it's called. And it's the same thing as core resonance colonies, just a different application. And it's really an exciting place to play. We need to learn how to quiet the nervous system, enable a natural state of connection with source, learn how to plug in, learn how to let it express through us for what we get, what I call ride of a lifetime.